Chapter 37. Jason ran through the doors leading to the command salon, flashed past nervous, startled officers there, and hurtled to the doors leading into his private office. His office, with its secret access to the secret quarters. Alana. In his office, he slammed open the panel leading to his hidden corridor and slid to a halt in the midst of debris and the wreckage that had once been YVH-908. Mechanically, he raised his comlink to his lips. Bridge, report on all vehicles proximate to the Anakin Solo. There was no answer but the hiss of static. He could feel Alana astern, moving away from him, but precise distances and speeds were impossible for him to measure. There was a hole in the floor of his little workshop. That had to be the means by which Alana's kidnappers had entered. But had they left by the same way, or out his office door? He had to follow, but the wrong choice could cost him precious seconds. Suddenly, gasping for air, he raced back toward his office, toward the access to the corridor there. Aboard the Millennium Falcon. Jag saw the button light up on the comm board. Instantly, he banked the Falcon toward the Anakin Solo, which was at the heart of renewed conflict, its screen of capital ships now beset by Kaminori frigates and cruisers. In the seat behind him, C-3PO made sliding noises as his restraints failed to keep him in place.
"I say, sir, I might suggest a more gradual approach."
Jag nodded.
"Good idea. I'll pass it along to Han."
"Why, thank you, sir, though he's always been reluctant to implement my suggestions."
Kyle Katarn unstrapped himself from the co-pilot seat. Not inconvenienced by the Falcon's side-to-side maneuvers, he stood easily.
"I'll be ready at the docking ring."
Jag nodded absently.
"Watch out for lightsabers."
"Watch out for durasteel rails."
Kyle left. Ignoring further protests from the protocol droid, Jag angled in toward the Star Destroyer, picking a route that would bring him near the smallest number of starfighter conflicts or capital ship laser battery exchanges. He knew his target zone by diagram and by sight. An airlock on the forward port side, not far from Jason Solo's private hangar. Now all he had to do was navigate through a bewildering field of turbolaser and ion cannon beams to get there alive. Sial heard the two-tone musical signal over her comm board, followed by her father's words.
"Extraction has begun. All free Raykels maneuver to the Anakin Solo's port side, amidships to bow, and draw off its fire."
Most of the Raykels were free. When the Kaminori task force had jumped into the conflict, the Rogues and other Alliance starfighter units had largely lost interest in the mystery squadron that seemed to want to fight, but had no other evident objective. They broke off and attacked the Kaminori capital ships, leaving the Raykels unencumbered. Wedge led the remaining starfighters of his squadron into the proximity of the Anakin Solo, skirting just within its firing range, drawing turbolaser fire, responding with quad-linked lasers and the occasional proton torpedo aimed at weapons batteries. Mostly, they distracted the Star Destroyer's gunners and worked to keep themselves alive. In the midst of all this, the Millennium Falcon flashed by, weaving through a reduced screen of incoming fire, and managed to arrive just above the destroyer's hull, too close for its guns to target.
"That boy can fly,"
Sial admitted. There was a trace of pride in Wedge's reply.
"Yes, he can. He should have kept his mother's family name. It'd be good to have another Jagged Antilles in the galaxy."
"Stop being smug, leader."
"Yes, for..."
Alana in Leia's arms, the rescue party skidded around a corner. Han slowed, leaning back around the corner, firing with his blaster pistol, keeping the pursuers pinned down. Iella reached the airlock hatch first, or would have if R2-D2 hadn't already been there. As she approached, the droid tweedled at her, and the hatch slid open. Beyond, the far hatch opened simultaneously, revealing the starboard docking ring of the Falcon, Master Katarn waiting there. Iella didn't even have to slow her running pace. Leia swept aboard.
Master Katarn, good to see you.
He bowed.
Two injured men in a droid shuttle service, as requested.
The sound of Han's blaster fire picked up. Then his weapon fell silent. Leia's heart seemed to skip a beat until she realized there were more distant weapon sounds now. Lightsabers. R2-D2 rolled aboard, offering Kyle a musical note of greeting, and Han was mere steps behind.
Luke, Ben, and Saba are coming fast.
Leia nodded and carried Alana into the crew quarters, setting her down on one of the bunks.
You need to strap in, sweetie. We may need to do some violent maneuvers.
Alana's bright eyes made a plea of her next question.
Can I be in the cockpit instead?
Not this time, but soon.
With the Force lending him speed, Kytus hurtled down the side passage, his leaps carrying him over the bodies, some injured and moaning, some dead, of ship's security personnel, and here and there their severed arms. Far ahead, just past a group of at least a dozen injured personnel, he saw Luke turn rightward at a cross corridor. But by the time Kytus rounded that corridor, the airlock hatch at the far end was closed, and he could see a gray-white hull speeding by. Gasping for breath, he raised his comlink.
This is Solo. Do not fire on the Millennium Falcon. Anyone who fires on her dies. Use tractor beams only.
He heard, but paid no attention to the acknowledgement from the bridge. He took no mind of the confusion in the officer's voice as the man reported progress with the tractor beams, which turned into no progress as the weapons officer's switch over to the tractor system gave the Falcon precious moments in which to pull away from the Anakin Solo.
Yes, I once fired on the Falcon from this very ship, but my daughter was not aboard her then.
He could feel her, Alana's shining presence, growing ever more distant, and each moment of separation felt like another needle being hammered into his heart. Finally it came, the report he dreaded, the one he could not forestall no matter how strongly, lovingly, hopelessly he reached out to his daughter through the Force.
Sir, I'm sorry to report that the Millennium Falcon has entered hyperspace.
His legs failed him, and he sank to the deck plates, kneeling in his pain and sudden grief. Center Point Station, Fire Control Chamber. Vibro looked over the controls before him. Everything was ready. All it took was a finger on the button. The shouts from outside were more annoying than ever.
We've got relief coming! They're making another push! Hold tight! Hold tight!
And as ever, there were screams, more numerous now, getting closer. The Corellians were losing. This chamber would fall to the Coruscanti. The station would fall to them. But it would be too late. They wouldn't be able to call themselves Coruscanti anymore. He hissed to get the other technician's attention. She was looking behind them, toward the door, something like fear on her face, but now she glanced Vibro's way. He smiled at her.
Hey, watch this.
He hit the button. The crew and passengers of the Millennium Falcon, outbound, with their escort of Raykel X-Wings, felt something hammer the freighter. It was like a laser shot getting through the shields. But no ship was pursuing them, and the Falcon's rear surfaces lit up with light from behind. Proximity alarms in the cockpit howled. Han, in the co-pilot's seat, his expression suggesting he would never again in his life allow a situation in which he sat there, flicked the cockpit monitor over to show the rear holocam view. Center Point Station was a glowing ball, a perfect sphere of light, perhaps 500 kilometers in diameter. As Han watched, the sphere contracted almost instantly, leaving nothing behind in the volume it had occupied. Everything that had been there was gone. Corellian ships, Alliance ships, Kaminori ships, and Center Point Station itself. The Anakin Solo, safely beyond the boundary of that momentary sphere, seemed unharmed, as did every ship and starfighter in its vicinity. Han gulped. Was that... Kyle, in the rear seat beside C-3PO, offered a pained grunt.
That was a massive loss of life. A cessation in the Force. Whatever was there no longer exists.
Jaina? Kip?
Jag checked his sensor board.
Jaina's on our flank, and the broadside was even farther away than we were. Their transceiver reports them intact.
Han sagged in relief. Maybe it was better that he didn't fly right now. Aboard the Anakin Solo, Kytus walked onto the bridge. His cloak should have been swirling around him. It wasn't. Why? Oh, yes. He'd given it away. It had betrayed him. The bridge had changed. There was extensive damage. There were bodies everywhere and medics working on them, carrying them out. He nodded. He remembered that, too. There had been a fight. The officers began shooting questions at him the moment he appeared.
Orders, sir!
Sir, the Confederation forces outnumber us. They're stronger than our forces.
Sir, Admiral Neothel is standing by on Holocom. She wants to talk to you at once.
Alana.
He marched forward to his viewports, but couldn't see through them. While he stood there wondering at their sudden opacity, he began answering questions.
Recall our squadrons. Set course for home. We're leaving. Tell Admiral Neothel there's been a problem.
Minutes passed. A sound he had been hearing, distant booms that made the bridge shake, gradually became less frequent, finally dying out altogether. Yet still he could not see the stars. And Alana did not return. But a question formed in his mind. A question of his own. He turned to face what remained of his bridge crew.
How did they come aboard my ship? Luke Skywalker, and those with him.
The officers looked among themselves. Then Lieutenant Tebbutt, at the security station, stood. The right sleeve of her tunic was scorched, and she had a cut across her neck, not deep enough to be dangerous.
Sir, we were approached by General Selchu's shuttle, which was being fired upon by several X-wings. We allowed the shuttle to land. As it turned out, this was a ruse. The Jedi were aboard the shuttle, and General Selchu was in one of the X-wings, trying to destroy the shuttle. General Selchu is in the medical ward, recovering from a stun bolt.
Kytus regarded her.
Who allowed the shuttle to land?
I did, sir. It broadcast all correct identification and passwords.
It was full of assassins, saboteurs, and criminals. And yet, you allowed it to land.
She fidgeted under his gaze.
Yes, sir. I was following security protocols.
Do the protocols say for you to allow assassins, saboteurs, and criminals aboard?
No, sir.
Then you were not following security protocols. You did not follow security protocols, and because of it, many people have died, and I could not coordinate our attack on Center Point Station, and this mission is a failure. correct?
Her next words were quiet and halting, as though she were giving directions in a language she did not speak very well.
Sir, anyone in my position would have done exactly the same. This is what the protocols are for, to define responses and procedures. I believe my actions were correct. Under the known circumstances,
Kaidus gestured, raising a hand, and under his exertion of power, Tebbut floated up in the air, putting her slightly above his level. Her eyes grew wide.
Sir,
Kaidus closed his hand into a fist. Now no more words came from her, just pained gasps. She grasped with increasing desperation at a choking hand that just was not there. He continued, his voice still level, controlled.
Lieutenant, we can't have that. Gross incompetence, gross insubordination, the deliberate contravention of orders and top-level plans. Nor can we let it go unpunished, can we?
Captain Neville approached.
Sir, this is not the time or the way.
Not looking at the quarren, Kaidus gestured with his free hand, and Neville was suddenly flying backward, skidding across the raised walkway, fetching up against the blast doors through which the Skywalkers had so recently left. Amazingly, Tebbut was still trying to talk.
Sir, can't... Loyal...
Loyal!
The word exploded out of Kaidus, raising his voice a screechy octave.
How dare you use that word? You may not say that word ever again. Loyal officers do not betray their command, their comrades, their oaths!
His outrage turned everything he saw a reddish hue, even Tebbut's face. And there was only one way to restore everything to its proper color. He tightened his grip. The sound of Tebbut's neck breaking was startlingly loud over the hum of the bridge's monitors and computer gear. Kaidus dashed his hand down. Tebbut's body slammed to the deck plates below her. More bones snapped. She lay behind her security station, bent at an odd sideways angle at the waist, her eyes fixed open, staring at the ceiling. Kaidus breathed out all his rage. Colors returned to vibrant normalcy. He turned and walked toward the stern. As he passed Neville, still lying where Kaidus had thrown him, he said,
"I'll be in my quarters."
Neville stared at him with, what? Fear? Anger? Obsequious acceptance? Kaidus couldn't tell. The fishy folk were so hard to read, Mon Cals and Quarren alike. He didn't like them anymore.